In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. On this show in 2014, we edged further out on the limb exploring the idea that we live among non-humans masquerading as humans. The first episode examined a range of popular literature and films such as past guests Ray Nelson's 8 o'clock in the Morning, Stephen King's The 10 o'clock People, and Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Those stories in particular reference an altering of human consciousness that allow the human to break the hypnotic trance and see through the invader's human disguise. The second show examined the forms of camouflage the intruders take within the concept of they walk among us, such as the human is partially souled, or possessed, or a clone, or a doppelganger, or an android, or a non-human wearing the liquid crystal human suit. The history of sleight of hand and magic performance reveal how the limits of human perception are easily exploited. There are many places for masquerading interlopers to hide. Our eyes detect light within only a narrow range of the broad electromagnetic spectrum. Humans also have a physiological blind spot, the place in the visual field that corresponds to the lack of light-detecting photoreceptor cells on the optic disc of the retina, where the optic nerve passes through the optic disc. There are also psychological blind spots and personality shadows that can cloud perception. Within this context, books and films produced on this topic are also by design, because fictionalizing subversive alien invasions would be an effective use of reverse psychology. You saw it on TV, therefore it can't be real. Despite the potential social ridicule, an increasing awareness has emerged based on video evidence and honest internet research. Many people have considered that some type of invasion has already taken place, as flagrant efforts to enslave humanity are openly engineered. We're joined today by Patrick. He's known on YouTube as Kinnegan. Kinnegan is among a handful of dedicated researchers into the cultural encoded historic aspects of the biggest secret known to the human race. Kinnegan, welcome to Another News.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Well, Kinnegan, would you please give listeners some background on yourself and your area of research?
I mainly research the reptilian phenomenon or conspiracy. The idea that there are an elite group, some people know as the Illuminati, of reptilian shapeshifters that have bloodlines going all the way back to Sumeria and Babylon, who quite possibly came to the planet after the downfall of Atlantis. I've been researching the subject since about 2011. When I came across the research of such people as David Icke and Zachariah Sitchin on the Anunnaki, I started researching the subject, and a decade later, I started doing lectures on everything tying in with the Illuminati, from the occult aspects of it to the possible two different species of reptilians on the planet, one known as the Alpha Draconian reptilians, and one known as the native Terrans, which are quite possibly indigenous to planet Earth.
There are many species of beings interacting among an unwitting human population, and there are also many types of reptilian beings that I suppose would need to be clarified. Would you give listeners an overview of those different types of reptilian beings, and in general, the beings that are mimicking human form?
Sure. The Alpha Draconian reptilians, depicted in ancient Sumeria on wall reliefs that come from ancient Mesopotamia, they are depicted as having these bird-like faces with eagle's wings. And the eagle has been a prominent symbol. I believe these Alpha Draconian reptilians are more avian-looking in appearance, looking a lot like the Skeksis from the Dark Crystal movie. Now, that originally came out in 1982, but there has been a Netflix reboot, which is good because if people have never seen the original movie. If they see the new Netflix, the Skeksis are depicted the same way. And then we have a native Terran species of reptilians, ones which we have statues of. There are statues in Peru. There's a statue named Morop, who is, Morop stands for iguana man. We also have statues of reptilians in Japanese temples, of all places. And the idea of the dragon and serpent bloodlines has been a reoccurring theme all throughout the occult. And but the Alpha Draconian reptilians are depicted by more or less the eagle, because it's the most reptilian thing they could put as a symbol and get away with it.
It's interesting you mentioned the eagle, Kenenigan. The symbol of the eagle has been used by Romans, the Nazis, the United States. It's also been depicted as a phoenix, and very often there are statues of eagles standing on top of the planet Earth, clutching it in their talons. And I remember hearing the eagle is really a reptilian domination symbol. Have you heard this?
Yes. Speaking about the eagle clutching its talons over Earth, that is actually a special reconnaissance patch that we have for intelligence organizations within our own military. And it is a dragon clutching the Earth. And, for example, avian symbols are used throughout the world. In Saudi Arabia, their national symbol is the falcon. In Russia, it's the phoenix, or the double phoenix. Some might be familiar with that. In America, it's the American eagle. The Nazis have used the eagle. The Romans have used the eagle. So it's this reoccurring symbol going all throughout history. Going back all the way to Sumeria, the Anunnaki wall reliefs had eagles' heads. So I believe it's also a symbol of the bloodlines rolling over the planet, known as the Illuminati. They use an avian symbol to represent their bloodline. Other parts of the world, yes, the dragon is used, if not the snake, but it's some type of serpent symbol between either an avian, eagle. Different types of birds are used throughout the world. For example, Horus in Egypt was always depicted as a falcon, which is pretty interesting. These reoccurring symbols, and all throughout occult texts, there's massive serpent symbolism, mainly with snakes and dragons themselves. And dragons is a concept that actually comes from Sumeria. Most people think, when they think of dragons, they think of Asia being the mythical origins of the dragon, but there's a dragon myth of creation tablet that comes from Sumeria itself. And that ties in with Mamu Tiamat, the dragon queen, who created the Anunnaki.
I didn't know that. David Icke, you mentioned earlier, has given the appearance of facing severe ridicule to present this type of information, that those in various positions of power are really shape-shifting reptilians. What are your thoughts about the authenticity of what Icke brings to the public domain?
Well, I can relate to him as far as the ridicule that comes. The first few years I started doing this, I was posting on online PHP forums, and I got ridiculed a lot for it and laughed at, told I was insane. But then as I stayed consistent over the years and learned more and more about it, a lot of people laugh at the idea at first, but when they start to really study the occult and looking into the a lot of the lectures that I give, where I show the symbolism of like the eagle and the Anunnaki and lectures into these ancient civilizations, they start realizing that it's a lot more realistic. There's definitely a reoccurring theme through the serpent symbolism throughout history, which is pretty interesting. Why is there so much fascination with serpents in the occult and ancient mythology? And the idea of shape-shifting can even be found in indigenous tribes from all around the world. Just about every continent on this planet, going from there's mythology of shapeshifters going all the way from Native Americans to Africans, the Aboriginals in Australia. They all talk about a race of beings that have the ability to shapeshift.
Really, anybody who takes the time to do a little bit of research will start to see it threading through indigenous culture, through ancient cultures, and you mentioned the sculptures and art through human history depicting reptilians and humans. A good example is the Vigeland's Park sculptures in Norway. and they leave nothing to the imagination. For example, one huge stone figure is of a reptilian coiled around a naked, paralyzed human. Would you talk about this level of communication?
Yes, that's a very infamous part. I haven't made a video about that yet. I will in the future, though, but I had one YouTube channel originally, Canadian, that was taken down off YouTube for censorship, and I covered that park in a video, and I've seen all the statues, and I did some analysis of it, and the metaphoric symbolism going on in that park between the union of reptilian and mammalian is mind-boggling. They even have some statues that are like reptilian-looking dragons, and then they also have the statues of the serpents coiled around the humans also. There's a few hundred of them, if I'm correct. And they also have this intertwining kind of serpent story, and it's very bizarre also. Why would somebody just think of creating this park, and where did they get the idea for this?
And how do you get accepted, funded for this when the topic is ridiculed when you bring it up?
Yes.
You can put that on the pile of evidence. Connecticut, there seems to be a complex parasitic relationship with humans and these creatures. There's also the custodial element, similar to tagging animals in the wilderness, but also within the cities, it's more of a human stockyard. Past guest Eve Lorgan, author of the book Love Bite, it's a book about alien interference in human relationships. Well, she references Charles Fort's statement that we are property, indicating that the property deed for some of us is temporarily held by reptilian beings. What are your thoughts on those concepts?
Well, going back to Sumeria, we have the Code of Hammurabi that was written, and these were 300 slave laws that the Anunnaki used as a guide to ruling over humans, and this idea comes from Sumeria. Going back to Rome, another civilization symbolized by the eagle, 90% of the citizens of Rome were slaves. It was always built around a slave culture, the same thing going back to Egypt as well. So we have the Code of Hammurabi. In Egypt, it becomes the 42 laws of Mot, and then kind of like what you said about the property going all the way up into modern times, that would be like the Federal Reserve tying in with the British Maritime Law and our Social Security numbers, as all humans are debt property of the Corporation of the United States, which is part of a bigger corporation. Yes, we can call that, you know, the Illuminati, but that's kind of how they branch out and control over the world. This would all tie back to Swiss banking, was set up by the Vatican and the Knights Templar. So I believe that part of the way that they're controlling over 7 billion humans is what used to be slave laws in ancient times is now corporations owning us as corporate property, more or less. And that sets up the whole thing for the debt society, which is another way that's keeping civilization behind, because we are still basically a slave and debt culture still.
You cover this on your YouTube channel, Connecticut 2.0, suspect the reboot of the original, because you've received a lot of interference, and it's not really such a mystery when you're talking about this particular topic openly and honestly. Let's get into some more current information. There are many ways these beings can blend in with humans, but sometimes the camera can reveal their true form. And it can be dismissed as digital breakdowns or low bandwidth problems, things like that. And you can get on with your life. But on this show, we've talked about, for example, the breakdown of the liquid crystal suits, creating the liquid crystal polarization or zebra effect that you've discussed on your channel. And some popular videos include several Fox News and CNN reporters, Jenna Bush, the Bengals interview, several Fox and Friends examples. What comments would you have about who is caught shapeshifting like this on camera and when and why and in the context of delivering specific information?
All right. The concept of liquid crystal polarization, I'm going to give you my theory on what's happening here just through what I've learned through the occult. Many people are aware of the black and white checkerboard floors, most commonly associated with secret societies. All floors of secret societies had this black and white checkered floor. And it's pretty interesting that some of these anomaly effects, or the zebra effect, are always black and white on camera. The occult is ruled by magnetics. That's basically what black magic and sorcery is. It's the movement of all things, magnetic energy. And what happens, I believe, these people specifically all the time might not be reptilian, but what is archon possession? People who dabble in black magic and they have demonic or archonic energy attached to the subconsciousness. And these entities, which attach to people's subconsciousness, can do such things as causing slit eyes or causing eyes to go fully black. And they can also cause magnetic anomalies in cameras, and cameras pick this up. It would be pretty easy to write off if this effect just happened one time, but me and other YouTubers have caught the same effect happening on dozens of people, and I don't believe in coincidences when it comes to that, and the effects are always black and white. So we call this liquid crystal polarization, and can be a side effect of people who may not be reptilian themselves, but are dabbling in the occult and have negative archonic energy attached to the self-consciousness.
And have you noticed the shape-shifting occurring during specific content?
No, not per se. But in a lot of the videos, we do see the people in studios interacting to the people it's happening to. They will often cut the cameras and then go back to the person. And I believe that's reason being is probably the only the cameraman and the people monitoring in the booth that actually see this anomaly happening. You wouldn't see it in real life if you were sitting in the room with them. But when it happens on camera, though, we have a lot of examples where the studios are interacting with the reporters. Like, they see it happening also, mainly on live transmissions.
At first, it is easy to dismiss as some type of digital error or low bandwidth, but when the same anomaly continues to happen again and again, it's quite something. And one of the more astounding glitches is the video depicting someone named Yusef Estes, a religious leader who in a few seconds was revealed to be a green-colored, large-eyed being, and his face peeled away, beard and all. It was really disturbing to see. What are your thoughts on this one in particular?
That was one of the first reptilian shapeshifter videos I ever created when I started doing YouTube videos. And it's the best one of an actual Alpha Draconian reptilian. And as he starts to form, he looks a kind of like, you know, the Skeksis from the Dark Crystal, and this kind of avian-looking face. And that shapeshift has been floating around on YouTube for quite a few years, but I'm not the only one that has copies of that. There are a few other people, and no one's been able to disprove it. There is one part in the video when he shifts where you can completely see through his head, and that would be impossible with the camera until his reptilian head forms, and then it turns back to the human head. That one is pretty amazing. It's one of the better shapeshifts that I have. I'm an actual Alpha Draconian. It goes in with the theory. It's nothing negative against Islam, but these Alpha Draconians to rule 7 million people are probably putting themselves in strategic places, infiltrating religion, politics, places where they can make the most amount of damage in strategic places, and they infiltrate a lot of our institutions, I would say, because they feed off this negativity they create through this. They would have, in my opinion, characters throughout history such as Aleister Crowley, Anton LaVey, Yusef Estes, other people working within the Vatican, they would all, it doesn't matter the religion, I believe that there's reptilian shapeshifters infiltrating all these religious organizations so they can manipulate it. And they've been doing that for thousands of years.
To put a disclaimer in here, right, there's nothing specifically against any particular religion. We're talking about the complexities in this particular reality that we live in as humans and what human beings are really vulnerable to. And the strategic placement of these beings, areas of leadership, is a very key element to observe in terms of influence over masses of people.
Right. For example, Yusuf Estes is also a Islamic missionary, but he also worked with the United States federal prison system, and that's where he was getting his lot of converts and doing a lot of preaching, was within prisons. And prisons in themselves are huge harvesters of negative energy, and that's the kind of energy that these reptilians feed on. So, of course, yeah, a prison is going to be a prime breeding ground for these kind of entities and the kind of negativity that goes on within the prisons, and that's mainly what he was doing. And he also did some work with the United Nations also.
On another topic, what did you find out about reptilian blood and something called Han Purple?
Okay, Han Purple was a theory that I came up with on how they shapeshift. Han Purple is actually an ancient pigment, and they claim it wasn't rediscovered by chemists until 1992. The terracotta warriors from the tombs that were excavated in China are all covered in Han Purple. And it's a pigment that's made, and it's made from barium copper silicate. And it has these electrons which spin up and some spin down. And scientists found when an acute magnetic field is applied to Han Purple, and they lower the temperature down to 3 degrees Kelvin, that the tiles of the pigment all line up in one way, turning the third dimension into two dimensions. The theory is that these entities were fourth dimensional creatures, and my theory is they came down to the third dimension because one of the other interesting things about where the terracotta warriors are found in the emperor tombs in China and even in the Aztec temples, it's been disclosed, they found huge rivers of liquid mercury. So they can explain what the mercury was doing in these tombs. And it could even be a possibility that the terracotta warriors were not actually statues, that at one time they were real humans painted in Han purple that quite possibly that got put down into the second dimension, hence turning to clay. And we get a lot of stories that even come from the Bible about mixing iron with miry clay, which is pretty interesting. And it's said that a lot of creationism stories are always talking about humans being formed through the clay. If people are interested in that, I go into more detail, the science behind it, and, you know, obviously in that video. But it is, Han Purple is definitely a very interesting element. It has the ability to lower dimensions. It's very mind-boggling that all the terracotta warriors in those Chinese tombs are covered in Han Purple. Han Purple has also been found in tombs in Rome and Greece, of all places, also.
It's also touching on the Mud Fossil University thinking and the theories that they present. You mentioned the Bible. Most people hear about reptilians in the book of Genesis. It's also referenced in the wheat and the tare parable. Reptilians and aliens also show up in, you know, lore of indigenous tribes. How far back have you researched the documentation of these types of beings?
Well, going all the way back to the original tablets, the oldest known written work on planet Earth is the Epic of Gilgamesh. And I've studied pretty much going from there. And, of course, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, which were written by the Thoth the Atlantean, which talks about these reptilian shapeshifters infiltrating Atlantis. And then we have the Thoth claims to have built the Great Pyramid of Giza. That was part of a land called Ancient Kemet. It wasn't part of dynastic Egypt. And I believe that was one of the reasons why the Alpha Draconians first came to Earth. They probably saw Atlantis as a threat, being a positive civilization. It was also at that time, too, that I believe the native Terrans were above ground, because we have a lot of Lumeria is supposedly a continent that existed in what is the Pacific Ocean. And a lot of the South Pacific or ancient remnants of ancient Lemuria. And all throughout Asia, also in the Pacific, is where we get the, like I was telling you about, the statues in Japanese temples of native reptilian beings. And these native reptilians look a lot like the statues of the Ubaid lizard men found in all places of Iraq also. These ones look more typically like what people would think of as a reptilian, but they're kind of a little bit thinner than humans. Their faces kind of look, they have wide mouths, kind of like that of a frog's. And these statues are all throughout Japanese temples. And the Morop statue in Peru is pretty interesting, too. Like I said, that one is kind of more lizard-looking. But the theory is that these were coexisting at the time of dinosaurs. And they are theorized to have fled to the underground after the destruction of Atlantis, and are also hostile to the Alpha Draconian reptilians. The Alpha Draconians came here from the Alpha Draconian star system. That's how they get their name, Alpha Draco. That also is Latin for the word dragon.
Yeah, the one in Peru, I think that's a pretty big statue that you showed in one of your videos. It seemed like a warrior.
Yes. Been quite a few statues found around the world, and these, I believe it's just like diversity among the different ancient reptilian species. The ones in Japan don't seem to have like as many scales on them, and kind of look more like froggish looking skin, whereas the ones in South America seem to be scaled more. So it could just be some diversity of ancient species or something, but these ones are actually said to be native.
Researcher John Rhodes had referenced a May 1994 Omni magazine article that discusses the fact that the pheromones of women and female iguanas are a chemical match. And he suspects this is why the reptilian beings are so interested in our genetic evolution. What are your thoughts on this area of research?
I haven't heard about the pheromones before. So I really can't comment on that, but I find that quite interesting. Birds and lizards do have a lot in common, so there's no. But I don't believe the Alpha Draconians to be scaled. Like I said, their skin kind of more like a vulture-esque looking bird skin, and they're beaked, obviously, and very avian looking. Whereas the native reptilians, I believe, yeah, they probably do have a lot in common with modern lizards, and quite possibly. Most modern lizards are, you know, have origins going all the way back to dinosaurs, even though they're a lot smaller today. And I believe at the one time when Atlantis was here and Lemuria, the theory is these reptilians hurled the ice comet known as Venus at this planet and cracked it. And that's what caused the Mariana Trench and the downfall of Atlantis after these shape-shifting reptilians were discovered. At that time, there's some interesting stones that come out of South America, of all places, of one-time humans coexisting with dinosaurs. And there's theorized to be dinosaurs still alive in some parts of the Congo today, in the huge swamp there. A lot of these native Terran ancient species also coexisted with these dinosaurs. I believe a good reference to a TV show that showed that was the Slee Stacks in Land of the Lost, because we have kind of like a Bigfoot-looking creature, a red-haired, but I think that was a reference to these red-haired giants that were said to live at one time in that show. You have humans coexisting with dinosaurs, and you also have the Slee Stacks. And in Land of the Lost, the Slee Stacks were more or less interdimensional, if you remember the show. That was highly emphasized in the new remake of that movie also, about them being dimensional.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah, it was one of my favorite shows growing up in the 70s, but why they wanted to bring this to a children's audience is another interesting realm, and we'll get into that in a minute. But I wanted to talk with you about the strange appearances from certain so-called botched plastic surgeries of celebrities and fashion designers, or those, again, in positions of influence and power. You could argue it's surgery gone wrong, but it seems as if something else is going on. What are your thoughts?
Well, that would get into, there's a theory of human cloning, and it's becoming more of a bigger and bigger topic over the past few years. I've covered it a few times, that sometimes some celebrities could be ritually sacrificed and cloned. It was theorized that the reason for a lot of this plastic surgery was to cover up the, sometimes maybe the clones may not look correct sometimes. You know, you got to really think, what would cause so many people living in rich areas, Beverly Hills, you know, these people have a lot, they're very wealthy, and no one really likes going under surgery, or, you know, so why are all these people so infatuated with all this plastic surgery out there, and really what's going on? It's pretty interesting. There's a theory that, that ties in with them being able to control pop stars and celebrities, and tying in with the MK Ultra, if you're familiar with that. MK Ultra mind control, a lot of these pop stars and celebrities go through, and the breakdown between that is usually between 25 and 31 years old. Hence comes that, if you've ever heard the conspiracy of the 27 Club, an amazing list of actors and actresses and musicians that mysteriously died at the age of 27.
Mm-hmm.
And it's theorized that's when the MK Ultra mind control breaks down, right around that age. Some cases, though, they believe some celebrities keep going on because they play with the agenda and they're either replaced or cloned. And as these clones break down, that's why a lot of them get plastic surgery. And there are places offering human cloning services. I've just made a video about one that's actually in the Bahamas, of all places. It is run by the Aurelian cult, if you've ever heard of them.
I have, yes. Is that Clonaid?
Yes, yes it is. And Clonaid is not their real name. It says it right on their website. It's actually, the real name is kept private, but they do offer services for human cloning. It's pretty spooky because there's actually companies out there doing it. And that's just one company that we know of. And I find it highly suspicious they're in the Bahamas off U.S. soil also.
Well, you talked about movies such as Land of the Lost. The image of reptiles and bipedal reptilians has been fed to children through books, commercials, public television, feature films, and network TV. You couldn't miss it if you weren't paying attention, as if preparing humans for a revealing. From the scientific to the mythological to the alien perspective, the reptile serpent image has been positioned to occupy a lot of space in the human consciousness. Movies such as Stargate, the TV series V, Theodore Rex, Dreamscape, Enemy Mine, They Live, Dragonheart, they're tailored for adult viewers, showing a range of human-reptilian interaction. And the motion picture titled The Arrival with Charlie Sheen really stands out because it depicts an extraterrestrial species secretly planning to speed up the process of global warming in order to kill off the human race and make the Earth more inhabitable for their own kind. These beings can also shapeshift into human form. Would you talk about this psychological preparation and operation, please?
Yeah, I got two different ways to look at that. One, a lot of the reptilians depicted in movies and TV shows, for the most part, except for the Skeksis and the Dark Crystals, I call it kind of what is like reptilian kind of fear porn, where they want you to think they're these 1,000-pound strong lizard iguana-looking men, when actually they're very parasitic and weak in nature. And I believe that's what Jim Henson was showing in that movie. You know, kind of the infighting that goes on with the Skeksis and their bird-looking nature. And secondly, I think it's really more of indoctrinating each generation more and more into the occult. We definitely see it happening in Hollywood and with pop stars. We've recently, over the past year, had the unveiling from the Church of Satan of the Baphomet statue in public. So, yeah, they're trying to bring a lot of this occult and serpent symbolism more and more into the public and indoctrinate more and more people into the occult, because that's where their main source of power lies, is through the black magic matrix. Both in the Emerald Tablet said it was these reptilians that brought black magic here, and that in Atlantis they weren't practicing this type of sorcery and black magic, and this is where they draw a lot of their power from, and that's why they're trying to indoctrinate more and more people into the occult. For example, coming up in January, we have the halftime show for football, and that's probably over the years, you've probably seen lots of people doing analysis of the halftime shows and the open occult rituals that happen inside them. It goes in with the negative energy loss feeding that they feed off of, too, that would getting millions of people tuned in watching that at one time. A lot of the pop stars have done the, it's called the chair dance. That's why you'll see a lot of them, they dance on the chair. There's been quite a few pop stars that have done that. And actually, that actually comes from the occult, of all things. Yeah, it's a very Luciferian ritual. This is why they're trying to indoctrinate it more and more. There's been quite a few, like, for example, satanic churches, I believe, that have been filing for tax-free status as religions. We even have a Church of AI that I believe just got tax-free status also. This is a church of people who worship an artificial intelligence. And I believe that ties in a lot, too, with a lot of the occult negativity going on, because some people think that we're invoking these kind of interdimensional entities at CERN, of all places. That's why they have the Shiva, the destroyer statue, out front of CERN.
Well, yes, in terms of interdimensional entities and nonprofit status for those who decide to worship these particular entities, I'm not sure where that's leading, but it doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
Well, there's a theory that they are trying to set up what is known as the apocalypse. And a lot of things that I teach people from studying them myself, I often tell people Luciferians and the pagans that are engaging in the serpent worship are the biggest believers of God of all people, because a lot of their rituals are sacrilegious in nature. So they believe that they're going to invoke this Antichrist, and it's theorized that some people like me believe the Antichrist will be an androgynous reptilian shapeshifter, which is kind of the culture that they're trying to set up. And many people know this is what is called the New World Order. Now, the idea of the world order comes from the Agigi god Enki, and from ancient Sumeria. And Enki, there's a Sumerian tablet called Enki in the World Order. When he creates the Anunnaki, or the other Agigi, she's an Agigi god also, sorry, known as Inanna or Ishtar, and he sets her up to rule over hell. So it's kind of like they want to fulfill a prophecy, and some of the teachings they even teach in the occult is they're trying to usher in Armageddon and the bringing forth of the Antichrist, and that's where the depopulation, some other people may have heard of it, referred to as Agenda 21. That was the idea written on the Georgia Guidestones down in Georgia also, to kill off 90% of the world's population with Armageddon. Some people theorize what that could actually be. Will it be global warming? Will it be a nuclear holocaust? Will it be a combination of a few things? We don't know. But this is kind of like what they're setting up. So they tried to, this is where I was saying about them infiltrating places of power in religion and politics that they can manipulate and divide people. And they do this on all kinds of fronts. Look at the divide in America today, just in politics and with people. It's definitely there. You got to ask yourself who's really behind the scenes pulling in the strings for all this dividing. I believe it's a few of these entities in strategic places to manipulate the hearts and minds of a lot of people and getting that negative energy that they feed on, loss. Now, I think I've just seen you did a show about this. Another thing I'm interested in is, for example, orgone. You're familiar with that probably. I have some orgone in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that orgone is said to attract chi, or positive life energy, or prana. It's said that these demonic energies can't interact with orgone, whereas the negative energy that reptilians and archons feed on is known as luce, or negative energy. Normally, energy that, of all things, is controlled by your reptilian part of the brain, where a lot of people that do evil and heinous things, that's what's controlling them. That's the reptilian brain stem in the human brain. And they're trying to create all this negative energy, and that's what they feed on them, hence bring them back to the more parasitic aspect. This was, in all things, shown in the Dark Crystal with the way that these Skeksis draw the life essence out of creatures for immortality. And it's kind of the same concept, I believe, that's going on with these reptilian entities, and that's actually what they feed on.
That's a fascinating breakdown, Kinetic. Again, I appreciate you going in depth there. Right, the positive orgone energy versus the deadly orgone radiation. And it certainly makes sense because a lot of the etheric warriors out there that have been on the show have many times pointed out the artificial creation and increase of deadly orgone radiation on this planet from these cell tower structures or subverting areas that would normally release positive energy and they somehow invert it, things like that. You've gone into depth on something called adrenochrome, and on this show we've talked a lot about child trafficking. There's a connection there. What did you find in your research with the connection with non-humans and adrenochrome, child trafficking, and the power structure?
Well, for people not familiar, adrenochrome, it's adrenaline, and it's harvested through the human spine, usually through making the victim suffer first, which causes an increase in the amount of adrenaline in the adrenaline gland. Then that person is sacrificed, and a blood ritual is the only way to harvest it, and it's actually... they drink the adrenochrome, the adrenaline, adrenalated blood, and it gives them a high, much like an amphetamine or cocaine does. And it ties in with this idea of blood drinking going and blood magic. Now, what's interesting is in the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, Thoth warns that it was blood magic that first brought these reptilian entities into Atlantis, that the Atlanteans practicing this blood magic were invoking them, which was forbidden. You know, you talk about child trafficking, and there's a few theories on child trafficking. One is it's theorized that, sadly, they use a lot of foreign children not born in the United States for these rituals because they don't have birth certificates. No one goes looking, sadly, for these children if they go missing. Secondly, the pedophile aspect also, rooted from the reptilian brain. That's a very reptilian thing to do with children. And then to, you know, get rid of these children afterwards is come, sadly, the child sacrifice and adrenochrome harvesting. And that is mainly done by just high-level Luciferians themselves as part of this serpent worship that they engage in. And it's pretty sad. Probably the most infamous place that most people have probably heard of is Bohemian Grove out in California, where they have the Moloch statue. And Moloch is the Canaanite god of child sacrifice. And he's typically represented by the bull with the horns in Canaan, or out in Bohemian Grove, he's depicted by an owl, which is another avian symbol.
Your work and interaction on this topic is mainly online, Kinetic, and with your viewers. Do they sometimes send in really good quality evidence, such as photographic and video evidence?
Yeah, I get a lot of emails from people that ask me to look at different things. Over the years, I've gotten quite a few things. More recently, I've been focusing more on lectures. I used to make a lot of anomaly videos, but more recently, it's been a lot of lectures. The more I learn, you know, the more I can explain things. Like you said, it's such a massive subject to go over. Every one of these things, you know, each one of these subjects alone that we talked about tonight, for example, I could probably give hour-long lectures on in just separate videos. So it is a lot to cover, everything from the occult aspects, but I believe that it's all tied in together. It's like putting pieces of a massive puzzle together, everything from the the pedophilia, the child trafficking, the negative energy, the divide and conquer that's going on around the world, human suffering, wars, debt, it's all controlled by the small elite. We'll call them the powers that be, or the Illuminati, as I call them. It's my belief that the Illuminati are the shape-shifting reptilians themselves. I don't believe it's a secret society that normal humans can join. 20 years ago, the word Illuminati was very taboo to say. Now it's being used very generically, I would say, anymore. And that's part of what we were talking about earlier, that they're trying to get people more used to hearing the word Illuminati, and that's what I was talking about, converting more people into a cult worship and paganism and a lot of, the Church of Satan and all that.
Kenny, what are your thoughts on the idea that as a consensus develops in the public consciousness that the silent invasion has already occurred and they do walk among us, a distraction card is played by the power structure, such as a false flag event or a manufactured catastrophe?
What I really believe is going to happen is, in theory, going back to Sumeria and the amount of Alpha Draconian reptilians, supposedly there were only 300 Anunnaki created by the 10 Ijiji gods. And that's why I believe the number 300 has been so prevalent in ancient mythology. We have like the 300 Spartans battle the Persians at Thermopylae. And there's the 300 laws of Hammurabi, like I was saying. It's a reoccurring number throughout ancient mythology. So I believe there's only 300 of these reptilian Illuminati shapeshifters. And I believe the umbrella of what they're controlling is, I believe they do have hybrids working under them, people that, going back into the cloning aspect, and a lot of these hybrids are obviously controlled. It's also believed that they control this race of Archons, which are these typical 3-foot-tall iconic alien grays, kind of like soulless drones is what we call them, helping them with their black magic matrix. Some people normally will call them demons, but I believe demon itself is a word, a play on dimensional. They are expert biogenetic engineers, obviously. So it's believed that this Anunnaki created a few humans, and then the Archons to facilitate a lot of the black magic aspect. I don't believe that their numbers are as big as many people might think, but I believe that there are a lot of, and what they want to bring in with transhumanism, they're already pushing the agenda of humans mixing with biological androids and stuff like that, which would be, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a human or an android and with transhumanism, which would be under control of what? An artificial intelligence being channeled through CERN, of all things, from another dimension, for all we know.
Total control.
Yes. And that's what is theorized to be the New World Order, is this transhuman, you know, no human sense of identity, no human sense of religion, kind of this androgynous and an ushering in, you know, of course, the Antichrist at that time through Armageddon. And that's kind of because I believe that the world's becoming too big for them to control anymore. This is where we get into the depopulation and Agenda 21 aspects again.
Yes, listeners are familiar with Agenda 21. It's, I suppose, now called Agenda 2030. And that number 2030 connects to the time period that climate change protesters are saying, we have 12 years, we have 12 years. And, well, that's 2030. And it's really 2030 and a half, and that is connecting to Antichrist appearance. A Vatican scholar told me that. So that's an interesting revealing as well.
Yes. For all we know, the Antichrist is probably walking on the earth right now. And I've heard about the 2030, they're claiming global warming and a lot of this. But people are obviously familiar with, take for example, chemtrails, going back to Han Purple. One of the, as I said, Han Purple is made from barium, copper, silicate. And one of the primary chemicals found in chemtrails, of all things, is barium. Pretty interesting. I don't know what to make of that. It just happens, you know, I don't know if that's just a coincidence or there's something with these barium chemicals that they're trying to, maybe it's more conducive for the environment they want to create. Maybe they're thinking of launching a brand new hybrid of human being, for all we know, and that could be the transhumanistic human beings, kind of the Borg mentality that's tying in with being all humans being controlled by an artificial intelligence and being part android that ties in with transhumanism. They're pushing that more and more. One show that comes to mind as far as that goes, if you're familiar with Black Mirror.
I've heard of it, but I've not seen the film yet.
It ties in with a lot of transhumanism concepts. The TV show is set up kind of like The Twilight Zone, where every episode is its own individual episode. You don't have to watch them in sequential order. It goes in with a lot of the ability of humans being able to upload their consciousness to the cloud and live on immortally on network servers. And, yeah, it gets into a lot of the transhumanistic concepts. It's a very good show that goes into that aspect. With RFID chips, you've probably heard of them. Now, like in China, they have a social credit system for their citizens. And that concept, there was an episode on Black Mirror that went in with the same concept of social credit, where some of your privileges will be taken away if you make infractions. And China has this huge surveillance system set up with cameras everywhere, and every citizen is monitored, and they have a credit score. It's called a social credit score. Credit score goes too low, some of your public privileges are taken away, like the ability to travel or get jobs or get loans. That ties in with the transhumanism and control aspect also. It's 1984, like they said. It wasn't just a movie.
What would a proper awakening of the human race to successfully protect against and deal with the many subversive parasitic entities in this world and other dimensions look like?
Well, one, activating our pineal gland or third eye as a collective group. A lot of people, we've lost these powers of the third eye. We know the third eye is real and it can be activated, giving humans, you know, such powers that have been mocked for a long time, but they've proven to be real, such as telepathy. Take telepathy, for example. One of the barriers that we have as humans goes back to the Temple of Babel with our languages. We have like 3,000 languages on Earth. It's very difficult for people to communicate with language barriers. However, if you had an entire species that could communicate telepathically with each other, you kind of see the awakening that could happen there, just communication among species. So I think that a lot of that can be answered with, you know, universal awakening through the third eye of all things.
Well, we already have that ability. I mean, certain people already have that ability. They may use it, not even realize they're using it. But with our environments now saturated with a lot of EMF, I'm wondering if that's creating interference to telepathic connections.
Oh, I definitely believe so. This also ties into the reason why I believe we wear rubber-soled shoes, because it breaks down the conductivity to Mother Earth. And what's interesting is in the occult, they wear typically what are called magician shoes, or Native Americans wore moccasins. And what these are shoes that have leather bottoms, or in some of these rituals, they'll just go barefoot, and it connects you to the conductivity of Earth. And they need that in a cult ritual, whereas most humans, we wear rubber sole shoes, and we also drive in cars with rubber tires. It breaks the conductivity with Mother Earth and the natural energy that's around the planet. That's one of the ways. And then, as you just said, with all the Wi-Fi and EMF radiation going on, I'm in Philadelphia, you're in New York, you want power lines are everywhere. Those create magnetic fields. So, yeah, definitely in big cities, we get a lot of that interference going on.
Kenenigan, you've been producing a lot of content for your channel, Kenenigan 2.0. Are you planning to do longer form documentaries on this topic?
Well, I do plan on doing some documentary filmmaking in the future. I am in the process of also writing a book as well. Hopefully, I should have that book done within the next few months on this subject. subject because I just need to find other ways to get the information out there. YouTube is, it's been good. It's had its uses, but it's not a dependable platform anymore, if you know what I mean. There's definitely a few books that I could probably write about the subject and definitely getting in more into documentary filmmaking. In the future, I like to go around. I went to Area 51. Those videos are on my channel, and I plan to make a documentary with the footage I took from there, the UFOs I filmed out there. A few other places in the United States, for example, the infamous Serpent Mound in Ohio. I've done a lecture on the Serpent Mound from the Adena Indians. I like to go out there and, you know, travel around. The thing that's hard with the Anunnaki and ancient Mesopotamia, a lot of it's in the Middle East, and it's not a very easy or safe area to travel to right now, so it's very difficult. Babylon is modern-day Iraq, for example. So to go see, like, a lot of these ancient Sumerian civilizations, it's very difficult to travel to. I believe that's by design also. Like, they're almost trying to cover up a lot of the world history by making a lot of the ancient places not that accessible for most people to go investigate. There are some interesting places here in the United States, and we've got a pretty interesting history with legends of these reptilians and giants of all things at one time in America.
How would listeners find your channel and learn more about your work?
My YouTube channel is Kinnigan. That's K-I-N-N-I-N-G-A-N 2.0 YouTube. It should be pretty easy to find me that way. Any one of these things I talked about tonight, you, very easily with a search on my channel, you can find all these topics in more detail that I've given lectures on.
Kinnigan, where did that word Kinnigan come from?
From the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, it was said that there was one word that reptilian shapeshifters could not say, and when they were asked to say it, they would shapeshift into their reptilian form, and if they did, they were beheaded. That's how these reptilians were first discovered in Atlantis.
We covered a lot of material. We jumped around a little bit, but I think that's okay, and this can be disturbing to some people, especially if they're dealing with some type of anomalous trauma in their lives. But, Kinnigan, I appreciate you sharing your research, and sometimes with a needed sense of humor, it goes a long way in helping people untangle old programming. I thank you for being on In Other News.
All right, thank you.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit InOtherNewsRadio.com for archives and more information about the guests.